It's one of the biggest issues in Wisconsin's capital. How are we going to continue to pay for public schools? Right now, this year, direct public aid to public schools is $5.3 billion, and if you add tax credits, that takes it to $6.2 billion. But Governor Scott Walker in his budget and his budget fix-up bill have recommended a total of more than $1 billion in cuts. That's over a two-year period. It means a major dialogue over the future of public school fundings. I'm going to welcome three panelists to talk about the future of public schools, although we don't know all the details yet. First of all, I want to thank Joe Quick, Government Relations Specialist for the Wisconsin Association of School Boards. To his right is Jamie Benson, President of the Wisconsin Association of School District Administrators, also Superintendent of the River Valley School District, and to my immediate left, Don Johnson, Superintendent, Middleton Cross Plains School District. Gentlemen, thanks for coming in.
Glad to be here.
Let's give an overview. Now, the governor in his budget repair bill wants to, as you all know, strip back collective bargaining rights affecting teachers, and then the budget bill would include the actual cuts of more than $1 billion, Joe?
It is.
It is. Over a two-year period.
Yes. It's the largest cut in modern history to public education. And I think it's important that not only is aid being cut, the revenue limits being dialed back, so the local revenue, the property tax levy, is essentially taken out of the equation for local school district. And this is on top of almost 20 years of cuts because of the revenue limits that were imposed in 93-94. So this isn't a one-time thing for schools. They've been cutting year after year after year. And the opportunities for kids, the programs, and different services have been cut for almost two decades now. So this doesn't stand in isolation. This huge cut is on top of what school districts have worked under for almost 20 years.
But a quick follow-up before we go to Jamie and Don. Well, the governor says it's a tough budget, balancing the budget. Your reaction, Joe?
I think balancing it on the backs of kids isn't the right place to look.
Wow. Mr. Benson?
Well, I would agree. We have some very serious concerns with the direction of public education in Wisconsin right now. To be losing $4.5 million each of the next 2 years, we're approaching that $1 billion mark, and it causes some great concerns for us locally as well as statewide.
Now, that $4.5 million, is that the projected hit just for your school district, Jamie?
I need to correct myself. When I said $4.5 million, I was referring to $450 million.
Okay.
Thank you for the opportunity to let me correct myself. With regard to a two-year budget that's being proposed by the governor, if we're going to lose $450 million a year, approaching that $1 billion mark, it's devastating to schools. I think it's going to be a tough road for us to be able to recover from. And to take such a large step backwards is going to bring significant changes to public education.
And Mr. Johnson, Middleton, Cross Plains view?
You know, I believe that every district really is struggling with the cuts, and really it comes in two forms. One is the salary and benefits and our ability to get really high quality teachers and keep them. And the second is really making sure that we handle either the layoff, non-renewal, or hiring of staff in appropriate ways. We're concerned that our class sizes are going up and that programs may disappear, and that's something that we're working very hard to avoid.
Have programs been going away over the last 20 years, going back on what Joe said?
You know, I think what we've done is tried to streamline and really make our programs efficient in the face of some of the cuts. So in general, I think we've been pretty creative in maintaining things. Our staff really expects to provide the best, and our parents really expect it as well. So we're, so far, maintaining programs. I'm not sure if we can do that in this particular environment.
Let's start with the governor's budget fix-up bill. Were you surprised that he recommended doing away with collective bargaining, with the exception of wages capped by CPI? Was this news to you three?
It wasn't anything that school board members have asked for.
That was my next question.
They have, over the years, school board members have advocated for loosening up some of the restrictions related to bargaining. And let me give you an example. A four-year-old kindergarten. The state for years has provided grants to local communities that start up four-year-old kindergarten and get preference to districts that, if they worked with their local child care community, they'd be given preference for the grants. But collective bargaining agreements sometimes refuse to allow that to happen. It's happened in Madison, and Middleton is still working on trying to get four-year-old kindergarten. I think that's where we lose sight of what's best for children. I mean, we look at the poverty increasing in our state and know that small class sizes, getting kids as early as you can to help them be ready for school is so important, yet we're cutting back on that and not allowing school districts that kind of flexibility to start that kind of a program. I think that's the kind of bargaining reforms school boards were looking for. But to throw the entire system out, no one had ever advocated for
that. Is it fair to say then that you wanted tweaks in the collective bargaining system, not all but throwing it out? Jamie?
Yeah, I think that would be fair to say, just to reiterate, you know, some of the things that we would be looking for in collective bargaining would not be to throw the baby out with the bathwater. We'd be wanting to look at things like more flexibility with some of our staffing levels, early childhood education, 4K programs, and so on. It is difficult to have those community-based programs when the required licensure issues and some of those issues come into play.
And Don?
I agree. We did not advocate for doing away with collective bargaining, but we did have some interest in restructuring. I think there were probably more than just a few tweaks that we were looking for. And again, I think what happened is language that may have been put into place 10, 20, or even 30 years ago wasn't necessarily updated in a number of cases because of the structure. But we never really asked for anything this comprehensive, and it really has created a huge disruption, I think, for all of us.
Well, that's my next question. If this passes, and as you were, it's one Senate vote away from becoming law, what does it look like in your districts if you do away with collective bargaining for all but wages capped by CPA? Mr. Johnson?
Well, I mean, obviously we're only negotiating a dollar amount. There's only one thing to talk about, and that is actually, you know, limited by the revenue cap. So there's really not a real long conversation about that.
Can you offer any increases? Even a CPI wage increase? Excuse me for interrupting.
Yeah, I think we would offer some increase, but it would be balanced against you know, the decline in benefits. So overall, what teachers would see in our district, at least on according to our current projections, would be a significant decrease in their take-home pay. So that could be anywhere from 4% to 10%, depending on a variety of factors that we're still sorting out.
Mr. Benson, how would it look in River Valley?
Well, again, some of the things that we have a concern with would include whether or not collective bargaining would go beyond salary issues. We have a limit to the ability for bargaining that salary, as pointed out with the CPI increase and so on. Clearly, it gives school boards much more flexibility. I don't know for sure that school districts are going to have as much of a concern as the school employees would. But again, if we're going to continue to graduate some of the best and brightest kids in our nation, we need the best and the brightest teachers in the classroom to ensure that. And by decreasing wage and benefit packages, clearly that is not a step in the right direction.
Joe, let me ask you this. I've distributed from the governor's handouts. He announced his budget last Tuesday. And here's what he said, Table 8 of the budget in brief. School districts, if they took advantage of what he calls the tools and made their workers, everybody from superintendents down to custodians, I believe, contribute more for health care and pensions, you gentlemen have the numbers in front of you, this could potentially save Wisconsin school districts $488.9 million. Joe, put that number in and react to it.
Well, I don't know what the governor's assumptions are with this number, and let me focus in on the health care issue. Wisconsin retirement system contribution, that's probably 426 school districts. That's probably going to be a savings.
Okay.
But the health insurance, that's all over the board. There are many school boards that have negotiated employee contribution over the years. So I don't know if the governor's number assumes that at this point in time there is no school district that has its employees providing some of that resource. I don't know, but I do know that that's happening all across the state. that there are many school districts that have bargained that, and the union have worked together, and okay, we'll do 12, we'll do 15%. So I don't know if school districts can capture $205 million.
Because that's what the governor's summary says.
I don't know what they've assumed getting to that number.
Well, you gentlemen both run school districts. Do you have current contracts that are you locked up with your teachers through beyond the next biennium through 2013? Because his budget goes, as you know, 2011 through 13. Would you be able to save any of these savings if the budget repair bill passed?
Locally, the numbers that we look at as being proposed by the governor, I don't know statewide how the money shakes out, but I can tell you that in River Valley, we would be decreasing our revenues to the point $225,000 in additional deficit is created in our school district. How those numbers shake out differently across the state, we've had a hard enough time trying to figure out our own story rather than take a look at that statewide picture. But I can tell you that in our district at home, this plan causes our board to increase class sizes, reduce programs, look at different ways for us to achieve, to overcome a deficit of almost $250,000.
And just a quick follow-up before we get to Mr. Johnson. When you talk about cutting back on programs, which programs? What programs now existing might not be there in your school district, Mr. Benson?
Well, to be clear, we were already looking at budget deficits in the coming years, and our school board has been in a year-long process to determine how we're going to come up with additional revenue and or how we're going to decrease our expenditures. And so as we do that, we're looking, of course, not so much at math and science and English and social studies and history as areas that would be completely cut. But it's all of the other exploratory and elective type courses, everything from your ag program to your tech ed program and anything in between. And some of those courses can be consolidated and made into some kind of hybrid curriculums. But the real picture that this is going to bring new revenue to our district, that would not be an accurate reflection.
What percentage of health care costs are your teachers now paying, Mr. Benson?
5%.
5%. And this would take that up to 12, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Mr. Johnson, would your district save any money under the governor's pension and health insurance provisions?
We would. I mean, the estimate over the full year, the 2011-12 calendar year, is 6%, 5.8%, and then going up to approximately 6.2%. So the average is about 6%. So we certainly would save that. Again, the savings is a reduction in net salary for teachers because they'd be paying for that. So that's where that savings comes from. The second is the insurance. Currently, our staff does not pay a percentage of their insurance. We have, however, also been fortunate enough to be in an area where we have the lowest cost in the state. Our health insurance is lower than every other school district in the state of Wisconsin.
And why?
Well, there are probably a couple of reasons. One,
competition?
Competition in the Madison area certainly is helpful. Mm-hmm. Third, it's been a pretty aggressive approach on the part of our business department to make sure that we have a very competitive bidding process. And third, our employees are very cooperative and very health conscious in terms of trying to make sure that we have a great record in terms of our own health care and taking care of themselves. So I think it's all three of those. And really, in this particular case, you know, the union has done a good job of working with us to make sure that those are low costs.
Well, what I hear all three of you saying is there's some pension sayings that you guys can take to the bank, correct? But this health care question plays out. There's either 424 or 426 different school districts across Wisconsin. Everyone is different.
Yes.
Have you got contracts with teachers that go through how far? How far are you
out? Our contract ends actually in June of 2011. So most districts right now are determining whether or not they want to settle quickly for a particular strategic reason or whether they'll wait until they really do a full analysis of the budget repair bill and the budget that has been presented by Governor Walker. So it depends on the district, and you'll find, I think, a wide range of rationales for doing that. And it's a fairly intricate set of circumstances in each district.
So if you were testifying before the state senate, which is one vote away from passing this, would you say please, we respectfully ask that you dial back from the governor's all but abolishing collective bargaining and just tweak it, or you're not policymakers, so you'll live with whatever they decide up in the Capitol. Your response?
Well, I think in answering your question, I also, just to go back a step, when you asked the percent that our employees would be paying for their health insurance, which would be a new 7% on top of the 5% that they're already paying, as well as their WRS pension plan, those are areas that our district doesn't have to fund to the same extent that we would have prior to the governor's proposal. However, don't forget that the governor's proposal also decreases state aid back to our district.
Yes.
And so when we're losing a little over $500 per student in the form of state aid, and the cap being restricted, rightly so, so that our taxpayers don't have to endure great hardship, that's where there's the other side of the story has to be told too, the decrease in aid.
Now, we've just gotten into this other part. The average cost in Wisconsin, $10,000, but the that's per pupil. And now you face a reduction on the property tax side of 5.5% of $500 per pupil. Per pupil. Does that vary by district?
It does.
Very much.
We're closer to $580 in the Middleton Cross Plains Area School District. So, and you'll find a range of dollar amounts depending on the assessed valuation and a number of other factors.
So does this mean $580 times how many pupils, Mr. Johnson?
6,000.
6,000. Is that your new budget gap that you and the school board are looking at?
Well,
because that's a big number,
yeah,
sir.
I mean the numbers then really are balanced against what then will teachers pay for WRS and every other employee, by the way. We tend to focus only on teachers. Some of our concern is about our employees, paraeducators, and others,
yes,
who make much less than an average teacher, and an increase in their insurance may be a huge proportion of their salary in contrast to maybe a professional teacher at mid-career. So I think it's important to really include all of our employees.
Yes.
We have to have people that serve food. We have to have bus drivers. We have to have custodians. All of those people fit into the equation here.
He's got a gap of 580 per pupil. What's yours?
550.
550 times how many students, sir?
1,350.
And so, as a result, you're looking at, you're already planning cuts, and you're just dialing those up?
Correct. To the tune of an additional $225,000 deficit.
Joe?
Steve, this is what you're going to see all over the state. There's a wide variance, because there are a lot of different factors involved. In a rural school district with declining enrollment, and these kinds of aid cuts coming, it'll be very difficult for them to be offering the same kind of program that they are this year. It's just, it's not possible, because education is personnel intensive. You're not saving any money by not using as much copier paper. You just can't do it. 80 to 85% of a school district's budget is personnel. So when you've got small school district, declining enrollment, and then huge aid cuts and a revenue limit cap, it's going to be disproportionate for that district compared to a suburban district that doesn't get much state aid to begin with.
You two gentlemen live in your communities. Are your communities split on whether the governor's budget recommendations are a good thing? We're seeing this amazing statewide dialogue and protests in the Capitol. Are your communities split? Are they? Is this pretty tough for you to the store and go to the church and hear what they're saying, yeah, Mr. Johnson?
It is a split. I think that, you know, our indications, which are unscientific, and just in terms of the feedback that we're getting in the district, we've probably seen somewhere in the vicinity of 45% that have been essentially advocating to not change collective bargaining and to support a sort of a teacher a point of view.
Right.
We've also seen probably 30%, 35%, somewhere in there, that say, boy, we're really comfortable with and advocating for this kind of a change. We need to balance a budget. But we're seeing that middle range as much smaller than we do on many
mm-hmm.
issues.
That only makes 25% in the middle.
Yeah, and maybe even a little bit less. And
really?
And this is, again, unscientific. This is just the people that actually contact us via email and via phone and others. But the polarization is much more significant on this issue than anything that we've seen in the past.
polarization. Is this a healthy dialogue for Wisconsin to have in terms of what should our schools provide? What are we looking for in our high school graduates? Is this a healthy conversation, Jamie?
I think it.
Or is it a harmful one?
Well, it's. I think there's potential for it to be a beneficial conversation. The problem is we're having the conversation a little bit late, it would appear. It seems to me that we should be having conversation, and our legislators ought to be having conversation with the governor to determine what might be best. But right now, it's the conversation comes a little out of sync with some of the changes. Just to add to that, I would say that locally, again, at our local level, we were looking at and discussing with and negotiating. Our school board was negotiating with our teachers and our support staff with making health insurance changes that would cost the district less, and with incrementally making changes to the pension plan and so on. I think the most difficult part of this for our employees is that it all kind of comes in one fell swoop. It's not an incremental change by any means. It's a pretty severe change, and I would agree with Mr. Johnson's comments earlier that some of our support staff and paraprofessionals, it's going to proportionally reduce their salary by a much larger number than with our teachers.
Just because they're not paid as much. Joe, you used to work for the Madison School District.
Yes.
The governor's recommendations, both the budget repair bill and the budget, is it going to harm our larger districts more than some of these? Both these gentlemen have average-sized school districts, but what's going to be the impact on the largest district?
Again, Steve, I don't think you can put the cuts in the governor's budget, you can't discuss them without putting them in context of what's happened for the last 20 years. Madison has cut $70 million in programs and services to kids, and that's mostly personnel. So that means an extracurricular class that was offered isn't offered anymore. But over 18 years, this happened in Madison. So you're already talking about huge cuts on top of 700 employees being gone and $70 million in program and services cut. So you can't isolate what's the history of what's happened with this situation now. So there's no way these kinds of cuts can come without damaging the program.
Well, just to follow up on Madison, two things. It was announced on the radio today. Madison is starting four-year-old kindergarten. Sign up is today. So Madison is expanding that. And Madison teachers, their last contracts called for what pay raises, Joe?
That was about
4%.
4.1. Well, the qualified economic offer was set at 3.8%. The state put local school districts in a situation that even though they were only getting about 2.5% revenue limit increase, the law said you got to start at 3.8%. So every year there was that gap for most school districts, and that's what's happened to this day. So you take all that history and then put on top of this the what the governor's budget proposes, there will be changes to the program. There are going to be larger classes. There are going to be opportunities missed. And you might have to start looking at the extracurriculars of sports. For years, there have already been cuts to some of the freshman sports and the junior varsity sports. I imagine school districts are going to have to continue to look at that. And I think that's part of the educational experience. Some might say, well, that's peripheral. But for some kids, that's the reason why they're showing up to school. And I think we can't lose sight of that, that for some kids, that's a really important part of their school day.
I want to ask you two gentlemen, since you actually run school districts, and he's a spokesman for a statewide trade association. Layoffs. You have seen, we've all read stories about some school districts issuing layoff notices. The spouse of Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald got a layoff notice. Tell me about potential layoffs, or have you issued any layoff notices in Middleton Cross Plains, Mr. Johnson?
Again, no layoff notices. We're looking right now at the attrition that we're seeing either via retirements, which are actually up more than double. It appears that they may be triple of a normal year.
Wow.
And then we certainly will balance the number of retirements and or people that leave for regular causes, a move or some other sort of thing, and really determine whether we're going to rehire. So those are two different ways to factor this in. The result, however, is reduced staff means increased class size or reductions in programming.
And you're
both.
Your deadline to issue layoff notices is when, sir?
The 15th of April.
Do you need to know whether the budget fix-up bill is passed by then?
Well,
to make some of these assumptions?
It absolutely is something we're hopeful of, because we can refine our determinations in terms of what our deficit would be and what we would need to do with our budget. So, you know, no one really wants a cut, but we also need some answers so we can plan.
And Mr. Benson, layoffs in your district?
Similar timeline, April 20th, and also similar with doubling our teachers that are retiring. It's a opportunity, obviously, for us to take a look at attrition and see whether or not some of those positions where we see a retirement, if they can be, again, combine the curriculum in another area or reduce the program altogether, increase student numbers in class sizes and so on. But we're definitely needing to be as creative as Middleton is to make ends meet. And the sooner we know definitively what parts of this plan are ingrained in stone, that would be of benefit for us, obviously, to plan our future as well.
Let me come back to a subject that you both just mentioned. Doing research for this show, I found a elementary school in Monona Grove District. 7 of the 15 classroom teachers are going to be retiring to protect their current or future benefits. You both said you're going to see a lot more of those teachers retiring?
Yes.
Why? For just that reason? The uncertainty of the future?
I think there are two reasons. One is that there's some serious uncertainty about what might happen at the state level through WRS. We don't have any definitive information there, but there have been suggestions that the structure of that could change. But again, that I think is more conjecture than anything else. There are also local early retirement benefits that are in place right now under the current contract. If the budget repair bill goes in and the only thing that's negotiable is really the salary, then the ability to have a local retirement system, an early retirement system, goes away completely at the pleasure of the board, school board.
Same thing for
River Valley. Same story.
You're going to see a lot of retirements?
Anecdotally, we're hearing that there's disproportionately more than in years past.
And I was asked this question yesterday as I was doing some research for this program. If the governor's budget repair bill eliminates most collective bargaining, is that going to in effect create a merit pay system for your teachers, gentlemen who run the districts?
Boy, we haven't really gone down that road yet, but one of the questions certainly has been steps and lanes, sort of the traditional way that teacher salaries have been handled. I think one thing that maybe is something that we shouldn't assume is that just because the legislature gives the school boards authority to change collective bargaining agreements, that everything is going to be thrown out. I think most school boards want a system of pay, benefits, and working conditions that are really positive for teachers. And to throw everything out and to make this a bad place to work is really counterproductive for our students. So despite the fact that I think our board welcomes some areas with some flexibility and really some changes, we really want to have an outstanding place for people to work and serve students. And that really is counter to just throwing everything out. So there are certainly changes we have that we'd like to make, but we certainly want to make this, whether it's River Valley or Middleton or Madison, we need our schools to be great places to work, not places that, the best and the brightest shy away from.
Any PSs on that? Jamie? Joe?
Same circumstance and same story in our district. I think teachers are concerned about the evaluation process found within collective bargaining, and how do we lay people off? What's the seniority rights? And some of those just cause issues, those are issues that our school board has no reason to want to throw that all away and begin anew. Certainly some additional flexibility is fine, but we don't intend to create a shallow workplace where we don't value the people that come to work every day and that we devalue the work that they do with our kids every day. So we don't want to completely eliminate some of the things that are found in a collective bargaining agreement.
Any PSs, Joe?
I think the superintendents, what they've said, is what most school districts will do.
We're almost out of time, so maybe this is a final question. You've all talked about the uncertainties, not knowing if budget repair is going to pass and if the governor's budget recommendations are going to pass. Let's assume that the budget fix-up bill passes with all the elements in place and the governor's budget pretty much passes. What do public schools look like a year from now, Joe?
Well, if it all passes, then you're going to have many more children going to private voucher schools that taxpayers are paying for, and there's going to be a modest amount of accountability. All the years that the voucher program has been in effect in Milwaukee, there's only one year where those kids took the same assessment tests as the public school kids this year. And now the language in the bill says they can take any norm reference test. If this program is so successful, why are the proponents unwilling to have comparisons of apples and apples? That's something that bothers me for the future of what education will look like in Wisconsin.
Thank you. Mr. Benson, if all the governor's elements are in place?
Well, to stretch out and go a little bit beyond where Joe was at, I think the governor is proposing $22 million additional dollars towards these voucher programs for Milwaukee schools only, another $18 million for charter schools specific to Milwaukee and Racine. That $40 million is not going to all of our public schools, so while the tight scrutiny comes on top of our public schools, these other kind of flexibilities are being created with really no significant evidence to show that voucher schools are any more effective than our public schools. Take a look at what other countries do when they're looking for improvements in education. Generally, we don't see a tax coming forward and using our teachers as the whipping boy or administrators or support staff. They look for different ways to be creative, and they value those countries place a high value in the benefit of education and its effect on our economy in the long run, and certainly the immediate impact that it has on students.
Mr. Johnson, a year from now with all the governors, if he gets everything he asked for, sir.
I think, unfortunately, our teachers are going to certainly take a monetary hit, and all of our staff a monetary hit in terms of their salaries. I think we're also going to see an increase in class size, which are two developments that really are not good for kids. I think the other piece that we're going to be striving for is to really recognize and value our teachers and other staff to maintain everything we possibly can, given the circumstances, and hopefully we can ride this out. And I would hope that in the long haul, Governor Walker, whether you're Republican or a Democrat, wants strong public education, and that this is a bit of a trough in our state budget, and that he has a commitment to have great public schools in the future, and that we do have accountability, and that it's accountability, as these two gentlemen mentioned, across the board: charter school, private school that's receiving public funds, public schools. Accountability needs to be across the board. We welcome that.
Well, I really appreciate your time, and there's no more central debate to what we in Wisconsin is going to be in the future than our public schools. You gentlemen have extremely tough jobs, and Joe, it doesn't look any easier for your position.
No, it doesn't.
Well, I want to thank Don Johnson, Jamie Benson, Joe Quick. Thanks very much for coming in and talking about this opening dialogue of the future of public education.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
Thank you.